Warning, this podcast contains spoilers for the second episode of The Last of Us on HBO Max. Hello, my name is Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Rosie Knight.
And welcome to X-Ray Vision, the Crooked Media Podcast, where we dive deep into your favorite shows, movies, comics, and pop culture.
In this episode, in the airlock, we're digging deep into The Last of Us episode 2.
Don't eat the bread!
Don't eat it. No cake. And in Nerd Out, we're doing a very relevant theory from Brandon.
Let's go, Brandon.
And, if you want to supportive of the theories, if you want to jump around, as always, just check the show notes for the timestamps.
Coming up, the airlock. We're stepping out of the airlock into the overgrown and ruined halls of a colonial museum in Back Bay, Boston for The Last of Us episode 2. Titled
Infected.
Titled Infected. A show, of course, created by Craig Mazin and Neil Druckmann, creative director of the game for Naughty Dog. EP'd by Mazin, and of course, this episode directed by game creative director Neil Druckmann.
Perfect timing as well, because Neil's about to introduce the big bad.
The big bad. The big boss.
The big
folks.
Boss. And he does it well.
We open in Jakarta, Indonesia, September 23rd, 2003, a place where Joel at this time was confused about its location. Didn't exactly know where it was. A military man enters a restaurant, interrupting the lunch of a woman who is dining there. Her name is Ibu Ratna. She is a professor at the University of Indonesia, specializing in mycology, a.k.a. the study of fungi. The man takes her to the skier wing of a hospital and shows her a specimen under a microscope, and Dr. Ratna is like, oh, that's Ophiocordyceps.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. Which is a fungus noted for its ability to take over and control ants.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, oh, where'd you get this? And he's like, it came off of a human specimen. She's like, no, it didn't.
She's like, absolutely not.
That's impossible. Cut to a even more secure part of the secure wing of the secure hospital. Dr. Ratna, now in full biohazard gear, is walking in to inspect the victim that this specimen was taken from. The general, very helpfully, tells her, get what you need and get the fuck out of there.
Don't go close. Don't do it. Just don't do it.
That talk should come before I suit up, I feel like.
They're not ever fully transparent to the good doctor. They rob her out of lunch. They take her somewhere. She thinks she's being arrested.
Yeah.
Then they're giving her, you know, a little bit of breadcrumbs news until she gets into this room and learns the true horror.
And the horror is that there is a young woman lying on the slab there. Dr. Ratna goes up, inspects the victim, finds a what is apparently a human bite mark on her ankle, cuts it open with a scalpel. There's a spongy fungal mushroom material in there. This is shocking. Dr. Ratna then reaches into the woman's mouth and pulls out a sight we're all familiar with by now. All those wriggling worm-like,
the kind of tentacle fungi that poke their way out creepily. And she just freaks out. She's out.
All the way out. Later on, she debriefs with the general. He tells her the victim was infected 30 hours ago in or around a factory that processes flour and grain. She says, oh, flour and grain, that's the perfect incubator for this fungi. Now, let's stop here.
Okay, let's pause, because we're about to get to the big theory.
There has been a theory out there that obviously this infection spread by bites. We've seen that. But how did it explode across the world at once? And one of the theories was bread. It got into the flour supply and all these flour products that went out across the world, carried it. And that's how everybody got sick at once. On top of that, there is the cake theory.
I love this because this is, so in the game, a lot of people are like, is this the same as the game? Is in the game, there's a mention of kind of infected crops. Mm-hmm. And that's really about as far as it goes. But the cake theory is great. And you were the one who introduced this to me. And the cake theory is, if you remember in that kind of heartbreaking cold open, Joel forgets to bring a cake back for the birthday celebration with Sarah. And the cake theory, expounding on the bread and wheat theory, is that the reason Joel and Sarah didn't get infected is because they didn't get a cake. And this also does some really...
I love it.
It's so good.
Our
Discord
brought this to our attention, and so thank you.
I was going
to
say, shout out, because the Jakarta choice is really, really intentional, because in the first episode, we hear Joel and Tommy trying to work out where Jakarta is, so we realize this is happening so close, and it happened so quickly, but as one of our incredible Discord users pointed out, Indonesia is actually home, and Jakarta to the biggest flour processing factory on Earth. So it's like a perfect place for this to have spread and for the wheat and flour theory faction to really kind of get a little bit of what seems like a confirmation, especially as, like you said, Jason, the doctor basically confirms that that would be a great way for it to spread.
You know what's funny is in episode one, Joel jokingly tells the Adlers that he's on Atkins, meaning he's just eating meat, no carbs. And everybody on Atkins made it.
And
day
just,
one.
Wait.
Everybody
made
it.
You just, I just had a light.
All the gluten-free folks, they made it.
I had a light bulb moment just then. When we meet the Adlers, the son is feeding his mother biscuits.
And
she's the first person.
And Sarah didn't eat the cookies because she doesn't like the raisin cookies.
Exactly. And then she was the first person that we saw who was infected.
Oh, shit.
So I think the bread theory is really important. And as we will get to momentarily, when we start digging into the rest of the episode, I think that it expands.
It goes to a dark place. Okay, so we learn, again, from the general that an employee at this flour processing plant became violent, started attacking her co-workers, bit several of them, one of whom is this dead woman here on the slab, and that at current time, 14 workers are missing from the factory. Dr. Ratna is shook.
She's horrified.
She's horrified. She's unmoored by this. The general is like, okay, so obviously we came to you as one of
how do we fix it?
As one of the most foremost, you know, experts in mycology in the world. We need a vaccine. We need a medicine. We need something to stop it. And the doctor's like, I got you. Here's what you do. You call up, you're in the military, call up your fighter wing and just fucking bomb the city.
Yep. She said, my whole life, I've worked on this my whole life. There's no cure.
We can't do anything.
There's no study.
Come on.
There's nothing. And you know what? It's a really brilliant reflection of the first cold open where the scientist sat on that stage of the late night talk show and said, if this happens, we lose.
I hate a quitter, but it turns out she was right.
Yeah.
She then tearfully says, hey, can I get a ride home just to spend the final moments here in civilization with my family? We go back to 2023. Ellie wakes up in a patch of sunlight in this beautiful kind of like idyllic patch of grass in the middle of this former
so
beauty salon.
Gamey.
It's wonderful.
It feels so wonderful. It's that perfect mix of bleakness and beauty that this story does so well.
Joel and Tess are watching her like hawks. Joel has his rifle.
Joel's
in
ready
hand.
To kill her.
He's ready. He's ready. Can't wait to do it. He's like, show us your arm. Ellie does. No change. Joel and Tess have never, ever seen anything like this, but they're not all the way there to believing that Ellie is actually immune, and Joel is further away, certainly, than Tess is. Ellie is like, hey, so we got this far. Where are all the infected? I heard that they're just swarming out here in the open city.
You can't leave the quarantine zone because you'll just die.
And Joel's like, hey, don't worry about that, which is Ellie rightly says, well, I'm going to actually worry about it because it seems like a big deal. Tess then is continuously pressuring Ellie to tell her what Marlene's plans were. What did Marlene want with you? Ellie says that Marlene found her after she was bitten, and then rather than kill her, which is usually what you do, she and the Fireflies watched her. They ran tests on her. You know, Tess is like, what tests? And she's like, yeah, I held up my arm. I counted to 10, except, and but mostly the thing that really impressed them was I didn't turn into a fucking monster.
Dude, Bella Ramsey is just great. Killing it. Okay, and let's stop here as well, because this leads to another theory, right, that we spoke about briefly. Why didn't Marlene shoot Ellie? Now, this has to be directly tied to the fact that in the first episode, Marlene tells Ellie that she was the one who put her in the Fedra, military school when she was a baby. So that hints to me that there may be more than one kid who they were watching for this purpose, which would be very different from the way it is in what we know of the first of The Last of Us game. But yeah, I think that's very interesting. And the fact that Marlene didn't, like, Marlene's brutal. The Fireflies are brutal. That's the point. The fact that she didn't just shoot an infected person in the head means she knew who she was. Right. Like she says, she knew her real name. She tells Ellie that in the first episode. So this is definitely a thread to keep watching.
At the very least, it lets us know that this is not Marlene's first rodeo with seeing if someone was immune. Mm-hmm. Like, she's done this. They had a system in place for testing.
Exactly. They had a testing system.
X-ray vision will be back. And we're back.
So Ellie goes off to do what one does when they wake up in the morning. And Tess and Joel have a little conversation. Tess is trying to convince Joel that this could be real, what Ellie's immunity, that might be legit, and that they should just go forward with dropping her to the Fireflies and getting the truck from them so they can go find Tommy. This is probably their best shot at doing that. Joel is like, I don't know, this is like more than we bargained for. Why don't we drop her back at the QZ? And Tess is like, if she goes back to the QZ, she'll get tested at some point. She'll come up infected, and then she'll get killed. And then we get nothing. So we might as well do this.
Mm-hmm.
There's a funny moment that follows, which is actually pretty meaningful considering our cold open, where it's breakfast time. Tess and Joel are eating the most rancid-looking jerky of unknown meat source.
It's so hard. It's like chewing on a ruler. They're really generous. They're like, oh, you know, you can have some of ours. And Ellie's like, don't worry about it, and pulls out this, like, huge chicken salad sandwich on this massive bread. Let's talk about the bread.
Okay, so there's kind of, like, two variables here. First, option one, nobody knows that it was bread and flour.
Exactly.
Right?
So they're just eating it.
They're just eating it. I guess, like, additionally to that would be the possibility that they know it's bread and flour, but they figured it out.
They figured out how to
fix it, which I don't buy.
Or the other option is that the Fireflies know about the bread and they're feeding it to Ellie to check that she doesn't get infected or to build up an immunity.
Dun, dun.
Which is incredibly bleak, but I also think very fitting. And I think it's really interesting because after that cold open, like, the big chat in our Discord was like, why would they show her eating bread? So, and you know, nothing in this show is unintentional. Yeah. So I'm really interested to see where that goes. But I kind of love how we have that dramatic irony of us knowing that bread is probably a death sentence if Tess and Joel eat it. But that's all they want in the world is just to eat this bread. And they're eating their nasty little jerky and they want to eat that. And they're like, is that chicken? Like, everything is so, but that in itself is just completely wild, especially, and it highlights on a base economy level how important she is to the Fireflies, because this is clearly, Joel and Tess are smugglers. They're out every single day smuggling, and they're like,
where'd you get chicken?
and she's like, from smugglers, but obviously, like, not you lot.
I think what is probably going on here is that there are certain people in the know who understand that bread and flour were the thing that sparked this. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's not widely known. And I think the fact that somebody can still make bread and get flour and stuff suggests, again, that there is, to your point, a kind of system in place to test people. Because you're not going to fucking find wheat and make bread for one person. Like, you're going to do it if there is a whole system going on of testing and finding out if people are immune. Tess wants to know why Marlene found Ellie so important. And she says, you know, like, and you better, by the way, you better actually tell us or we're going to bring you back. Ellie shoots back, well, then you won't get your car battery. And Tess is like, oh, you heard that? Then you must have heard that he wants to shoot you. And she looks at Joel and knows that it's true.
Joel looks at her like,
I'll shoot you right now. And it's a really, really chilling moment. And then we get this from Tess where she says, Joel and I, we aren't good people, so answer my question. Playing the game and watching the show,
mm-hmm.
The game kind of goes into this more, but the I sort of realized playing the game again that Joel and Tess were on their way to being Robert. Like they were,
oh, yeah.
They were, Robert was like their competitor.
Mm-hmm.
They were like moving up the ladder of like criminal kingpins in the QZ.
If they didn't kill so many people, they would have had an army.
Yeah.
But they killed everyone.
They, like, just
they couldn't
everyone.
Get an army because they kept killing everyone. But no, definitely like, I think that this episode and this series, honestly, just over these two episodes, like, it's done so much to expand on Tess, who was essentially just like an outrageous, like, death dealer, kind of like serial killer.
Yes, total psycho.
Total psycho. And like, you know what? That's fine because in the game, it serves a purpose. But even in such an emotional game, that's definitely one of those things where in the show, you're just like, wow, this is someone who, no matter what they've done, suddenly feels hope and suddenly wants to imagine something a bit better.
Yeah.
And you kind of don't really get to see that with Tess in the game until her last moments. But
yeah.
Here, she's really, she's tired.
And even that in her last moments in the game feels more out of desperation yeah. and like, let's just like finish it than actual feeling.
And also realizing how valuable Ellie is.
Yeah. Ellie tells them that what she knows is that there's apparently a Firefly base camp somewhere out west where doctors are working on a cure, and Joel finishes her sentence.
Yeah, yeah,
oh,
he's
yeah,
heard
whatever.
It before.
He's
like,
heard all this shit before. The key to finding the vaccine is me. And he's like, come on. This is, Tess, this is what you're going to buy. How many times have we heard this? There's no vaccine. There's no medicine. There's nothing we can do. He still wants to shoot her, but Tess really is like, hey, listen, again, the Fireflies believe it, so let's just do it.
Yeah, exactly. And also, I will say, this is really where you start to get, from this scene, you are getting now dialogue just directly lifted from the game. The first was more of a loose adaptation that brought things from the game.
Yeah.
This episode is so close
really
to
is.
What you see. It's actually quite wild. Like, I was playing the game, then I was watching it, then I was playing the game, and I was like, whoa, I'm really just seeing stuff being directly pulled, and this conversation is one of them. And kind of where the episode goes to these terrifying, nightmarish places, that is just so brilliantly adapted.
One of the lines that is ripped straight from the game is Ellie saying, hey, can I have a gun? Which she asks about 100 times
who
in the game.
Her, honestly, like?
They say no, because who wants to get shot in the back by a panicky
like 14-year-old?
Yeah. And she's like, well, I guess I'll just throw my sandwich at the infected, which, again, I think they'll like it because it's, you know, part of their history. They then head off into the kind of like sunlit wreckage of Boston. They're passing bomb craters. Mm. Tess is telling Ellie that, as Dr. Ratna suggested,
they just bombed the cities.
The American government at least came to the realization that their best course of action was just bomb the fuck out of cities. And it didn't work everywhere, but it appeared to work in Boston, where they managed to set up the quarantine zone. Now, they come to like a place where a building is partially collapsed across the street. So this is the direct path to the old state house. So what's left is the short path and the long path. And apparently the short path is like, you will get killed.
Yeah, it's the long path or the you die path.
Yeah.
And Ellie's like, I think I'll just
take
this long path.
So they go through this hotel, and here's a very telling moment that kind of dovetails nicely with what you were saying before about Tess, the difference between game Tess and show
mm-hmm.
Tess, and the way that this Tess, there's almost something vaguely parental about her and the way she talks to Ellie. Notice that Ellie walks next to her this whole time.
Doesn't walk next to Joel.
You know, Joel did say, like, I will kill you, but is walking next to Ellie this whole time. And they're, you know, and then Tess is being very generous about telling her about the dangers
mm-hmm.
of the open city. She asks how Ellie got bit. Ellie's like, oh, I went into the mall in the QZ that's blocked off. And I got bit. Tess asks, did you go in there alone? Ellie, I think, lies and says, yes. I
mm-hmm.
think she was in there with someone else who we're yeah. going to find out was the person who was her significant other. And Tess is impressed. And you can tell that Ellie is really feels she really
She's
feels
not getting
good
many
about
many compliments.
It. She feels good about the fact that someone is like, you're
And I
you're
think, like,
badass.
She sees in Tess, that's someone that she would want to be like, you know, someone who can survive this for 20 years, who can kind of thinks it's badass to go into an empty mall and get bit just for the sake of it. Like, very chaotic behavior, but really, it's a chaotic world. And yeah, I love to see that with Tess. And also, again, they do a really good job where, like, you get those moments in the game, but here there's a lot more kind of quiet time for them to walk. And we get this really fun conversation about, like, the different kinds of zombies and, like, threats that, like, because all Ellie's ever heard is rumors.
So that's a really wonderful part of this scene because, you know, Ellie is, like, looking at this, I mean, the city is in ruins, but it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And she's like, what the... She's almost disappointed that it's not as dangerous as everybody says.
Because the whole idea is they keep you in the quarantine zone by telling you the moment you get out.
It's like walking dead walkers.
Yeah. They're coming to the fences. They're going to eat you. But when you get out there, it's beautiful. It's overgrown. Nature has kind of found its way. And so far, she hasn't seen a single zombie infected.
So there aren't the ones with the split open heads that see in the dark like bats. And Tess and Joel are like...
They look at each other and they're like, I guess we'll keep that one.
At which point you hear the trademark screech of an infected, and Joel is just like, okay, let's just keep moving and let's go. They come to the flooded lobby of a hotel, which Ellie recognizes because she reads books. She is really having fun. Like, she's turning this into an adventure. It's obviously very dangerous, but she's never, again, been outside before. And she goes to the front desk, rings the bell, does this whole little scene about checking into the hotel.
And Joel's like, you are a weird kid. Yeah. He's like, you are a true weirdo. But you know what? It's really nice because in the game, Ellie's always, she's like always singing and like trying to teach herself how to whistle and doing like weird shit because to her it's
normal. And like little laughs when you see her looking and stuff.
Because it's normal. Like she's getting to explore this world, but the horrors of the world and the fact it's broken down are not new to her. Like that's all she's ever known. So that, I love that scene in Bella. They just sell it so well. They're like kind of talking and checking in and Joel's just like, what is wrong with you?
Eventually, Joel and Ellie get their first moment alone when Tess has to find an alternate path through another part of the building that's collapsed. And Joel compliments Ellie's switchblade. She seems skilled with it. Hey, nice knife. She asks where he's from. He says Texas. She asks where Tess is from. She says Detroit, which is in Michigan. And Ellie's like, I know that because I went to school. The parallels with Sarah and geography are right there. She then asks how Joel and Tess know each other. And how Joel got to Boston. Joel's like, no, we're not talking about me. No more questions about me. She then asks, how long do you think infected live? And he says, a few months, but some have been around since this all started, since, 20 years ago.
Yeah, those are the ones you don't want to meet.
Yeah, and she asks if he's ever killed any, and he says, yeah, a lot. and she asks, is it hard knowing they were people once? And he says, sometimes it was. And then she asks him, how hard was it to kill that soldier, when he had that flashback to the night on the riverbank with Sarah in his arms. And before he can answer, Tess returns. And she's got bad news that, hey, so the way we have to go, it's just all infected. It's an infected party.
You know the long way that was supposed to be the safe way? Yeah. Now the long way is also the dead way.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's just like infected everywhere and it's all bad. But we do learn something very interesting here. This is a cool episode if you want to know about the cordyceps virus and the infected, because we kind of get to learn through Ellie's eyes a little bit more about them.
Yeah, you see the sun kind of moving across the landscape, as clouds kind of go across the face of the sun. And as the sunbeam moves across these kind of this lolling
like hundreds,
crowd,
laid on the
they
floor.
All react to it in unison. And Ellie's like, "Oh my God, they're connected!" And Tess says, "More than you know." And she tells them that those fungal tentacles, they grow underground too, and they're like a fungal web, like an internet for the
fungus.
Yeah,
it creates like a hive mind.
Yeah, and if you step on a patch of those tentacles, it can send a message miles away, alert the hordes, and here they come.
And I believe that is new as well.
That is
very new.
And
And very terrifying.
And Tess, again, is being very warm in the way she's delivering this. She even says something to the effect of, listen, I'm not telling you this to scare you. I'm telling you this because you need to know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because you're immune, but you're not immune to getting ripped apart.
I love that line. She's like, yeah, you're immune to getting bitten, but you're not immune to, like, a zombie coming and, like, tearing your limbs off. Like, sorry, babe. And then bad news. The short way is the only way now, baby. Through the museum.
Through the museum. A beautiful red brick colonial covered in fungal tentacles.
Yeah, the door is literally, like, locked. Shut.
Joel goes over, touches one of the big tentacles. It's bone dry, and he says, "Well, you know,
maybe they're dead.
Maybe they're dead. Hey,
feeling positive."
So they get ready to head in. Flashlights come out. Tess and Ellie, you know, have another talk. Tess is like, "Listen, you just stay behind us. We're going to move very slow. If anything happens, you get between me and Joel." And then the guns come out. Now this is an interesting moment. So Tess uses that alternating flashlight pistol overhand grip, wrist mm-hmm. over wrist. And then later in the episode says, at the very end, says to Joel, save who you can save, which is a very 9/11 era first responder thing mm-hmm. to say. And it makes me think Tess was a cop.
Yeah, definitely some kind of first responder kind of situation. And also, it fits in with what we know of Tess, which in the game, the little things that we get to see about, she's usually the one who's giving Joel stuff to fix his wounds and wrap it up. And they do a nice inversion of that in this episode. But yeah, I thought that was a really great catch from you. And again, you know, Ellie just wants a gun.
Yeah, she's like, give me a gun.
She's like, I've got a spare hand. And Joel's like, good for you.
Hey, we're going to a dark building. Can I have a gun?
I mean, this is like, if you've played the game.
I've never shot a gun, but can I have one?
I mean, surely, weren't they teaching you that at the Fedra military school, though? I feel like they should, well, they probably didn't want the kids to have guns so they could escape. But still, I feel like that would have been probably a good idea in the context of this.
So in here is where we get our first view of the clickers. Now, Joel and Tess are initially feeling pretty good. They find this this group of dried up and dead infected, so they think, oh, good, they're dead. But then flashlight pan over to the side, and there's like a body that's been dead like 2 hours.
And it's like ripped apart, like its throat's ripped off. Ellie's freaked out because Ellie's like, I've been bitten, and that's not. It couldn't have done that to me. Like, this, what is this? And Tess's face. Like,
the fear on their faces.
It is so good.
Yeah. The way she's like, well, maybe he died outside. And then
maybe he got bit outside and he crawled in.
And they know that's not true.
They don't want to see it. Yeah, they don't want it.
And it tells you, if two badasses mm-hmm. like this, who have killed lots of infected.
And survived like 20 years.
Yeah. Are scared, then this is serious. Joel then tells Ellie, okay, listen, from this point forward.
Silence.
Silence, okay? Have you seen that movie with John Krasinski and Emily Blunt? All right, did you see that one? No, that didn't come out yet.
It didn't come out yet.
Sorry. Never came out. Okay, but it's like that.
Yeah.
Not quiet.
Silence. No quips, no like strange bits about being in a hotel.
Just
like,
fucking do it and don't say shit. So they go forward and they're, you know, they creep their way forward. And at one point, Ellie steps on a dried vine and they're just like, oh, shit. And then there's like a building collapse on the stairs and they're like, oh, shit. They eventually get into kind of one of the display halls. And behind them, as they go up, the staircase collapses behind them, which draws the attention of a clicker. You hear it screech first and then you hear the as it's searching, you know, with its audio waves, it comes up. And Ellie is crazy with fear. You can see it on her face how absolutely terrified she is. And then there's another screech, and now it's like, oh, shit, there's two of them.
Mm-hmm.
Joel gestures to Ellie. He says, like, you know, saying essentially, hey, they're blind, but they can hear. They can hear. So she's freaking out. The monster is coming closer. And then when it turns to them, we get this incredible view of really how what a great job they did on the creature design.
Like, oh, it's unbelievable.
Porting the design over from the game, but then obviously the detailing, the scariness, the mm-hmm. way it looks like something out of a Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, it's so good. Like, I was just saying this to Vasilis before, like our super sound guys, like, that when you play the game, you see the yellow outline. You see the implication of a fungus, but you're so busy trying to kill it, and it's scary, and a lot of times you see them outside. Though I have to say, the museum, they adapted it perfectly. This was the first time when I played the game that I got scared, and they really translated
this
that.
This is directly from
this
the game.
This is directly
from
the game. It's that moment where you go more into that classic horror video game style. You're in a dark space. You're lighting it with a flashlight. You've got to be stealthy. But I didn't expect them to be able to pull off the clickers and make them something so horrific. Like, Guillermo del Toro is a great pull. It's very Resident Evil. The kind of only sign of their humanity is this, like, gaping maw with broken teeth. And then on top of their heads are these, like, it's fungus, but it's also, you pointed out, it's like plating. It's almost like a dinosaur, like a triceratops, but, like, with fungus growing on top. It's truly horrific stuff. And even though, I have to say, pretty much everyone that I've seen loves this show. But if you were waiting for the episode where it becomes like a scary zombie show, this is the episode.
Yeah, this is it. So it comes close. It swings its face towards them into the beam of the flashlight, which whoever did that, don't do that. And
please don't do that.
And Ellie gasps, and now it's fucking on. And one thing we can say about these version of the clickers is they are way hardier than the video game version. The video game version, they take some gunshots, but if you get like two headshots, it's going to go down.
Yeah. The thing that I
depending
find,
on your difficulty level.
I was going to say, I'm very bad at headshots, I'm more of a 4 or 5 person. But you know what I will say? I'm going to be very interested to see how the clickers take it later on, because what I ended up finding was very easy, no matter my difficulty setting, is once you start modding your melee weapons, you can kill them in a couple of swipes.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to get close to one of these clickers to know how that would go.
They're like horrendous.
They supercharge them. And that kind of berserker mode where after you shoot them once and they come to... That is just horrific here.
So the fight is on. The first clicker, the one that's closest to them, takes like 4 or 5 like bullets directly to the torso. No reaction. Is fighting with Joel like nothing happened.
Which kind of makes sense if you think about it, because if it's just the body is essentially a shell,
then
why would it damage it? You know, you have to get to that cerebral cortex or wherever the main fungus is.
Shoot the head like every zombie movie.
That's the rule.
Tess and Ellie run. Big fight. At the end of it, they do take down both clickers, but and Tess is okay, except for
Tess
a twisted ankle.
Tess is looking
ankle.
Great. She looks good. Fine.
She says, "I'm fine. I twisted my ankle. That's it. Okay, let's move on." Ellie got bit again,
and she's like, "Well, at least it was me.
Hey,
if it had to be one of us,
right? We're fine." And they go out over the roof. They get on the roof. Tess is looking at Joel sadly, as he's taping her up.
I love
again,
this moment.
Again,
out of
the game.
You get this, like, these moments. Something that I love about this show that it understands about the game is these, like, moments of, like, empathy and compassion and comfort and these tiny moments that people can have together, like when he's wrapping her foot and they're kind of talking. And again, you go from this deep, dark, horrific halls where you're kind of chased by this nightmare monster onto this beautiful, sunlit rooftop with this broken-down cityscape. It's such wonderful juxtaposition, but it never feels kind of jarring.
Yeah.
It's just like a really nice breathing kind of spot. And we get another, you know, Joel and Tessa having this moment. And then you get this unbelievable shot of Ellie kind of as they traverse the piece of wood, which again is one of the most memorable scenes from the video game.
Now there's a small interaction here that I think tells you a lot about Joel and Tessa's history. Joel is like, hey, so, you know, maybe, you know, we don't know what happened with that first bite. Maybe this is the bite that'll
push her
over
the
edge.
It's going to get her.
And Tess snaps. She's like, can you just take the good news? You know, and maybe this time we can actually win. Mm-hmm. And it what it suggested to me, and I thought this was great writing, is that contra the game, Tess was the more hopeful one.
Yeah.
In their relationship.
Joel
was
the
dead
killer.
Inside. Yeah, Joel.
And in the game, he's dead inside, but it's like, he's dead inside and he just follows Tess and does whatever she wants. But here, he's dead inside and that allows him to do the terrible things that need to be done. Whereas with Tess can take it, but she's tired of giving it out. She wants that little bit of hope. She doesn't want to be killing people. She wants to imagine that this time they can actually win.
Yeah, this felt like a window into their relationship, that maybe Tess is the person who's like, oh, maybe it's real this time. Maybe we can do this. Maybe we can do that. Whereas Joel's like, this is never changing. This is what we're doing right now. Joel goes over to Ellie as Tess stays behind to kind of tape herself up. And you can see the state house across the way. It's beautiful under the sunlight. And as they move out, there's a great moment where Joel glances at his watch and just like takes one look at the broken watch. They get to the state house. Firefly convoy is there in front of the building. No sign of the Firefly themselves.
Suspicious.
Yeah, not good. Joel goes up. He checks the truck. It's streaked with blood. There's dead bodies all around, torn apart by infected, blood trail that's leading up into the state house. And Ellie's like, oh, they went inside. Tess now grabs Ellie by the arm and rushes in because she's ready to, like...
She's done.
She's ready to find out, like,
what's... Is it real?
What's next? Probably, you know, depending on... You know, probably because of the reveal that's about to happen, because she is... One, she is inspired by and buoyed by and really deeply touched by, like, this sliver of hope that she's feeling. And also, like, hey... If there is a cure, can we cook it up real quick?
Can I have it? Yeah, like, can I maybe have it? Yeah, like, how's it going? How's it going?
So they get in there and everybody's dead. And Joel reads the situation. So one or more of the Fireflies got infected. There is a fight as the healthy ones fought the sick ones. And then everybody lost, in Joel's words. Tess is then like, okay, well, there's got to be a fucking map or a radio or some kind of indication about where Ellie was supposed to go. And Joel's like, we're done. We
dropped her here. Let's go.
Let's go home, he says. And then Tess snaps, it's not my fucking home, which is like a hugely revealing comment again from Tess, who... All the while, you know, again, it suggests all the while, all the while, all the way, Tess has been, like, hoping for a real place, a real end to this. And then she says, you know, my luck had to run out sooner or later. I'm going to stay behind. And Ellie gets it. Tess was bitten. Joel is shattered by this. Tess shows him the wound, which is on her neck. And it's already, like, fungused out.
And like, she's like, look at Ellie's, like, this is, like, 3 weeks ago. Like, what the fuck is wrong with you? This is real. Because look at this.
Exact dialogue from the game where her reaction is like, oops, right?
You know, yeah,
like
yeah, that. Yeah.
Tess then begs Joel in an increasingly emotional appeal to take Ellie West to find Tommy and his group and to stop this, to cure this.
Yeah, she's
thing.
Like, your brother was a firefly. Like, if anything, he knows.
Joel is like, they won't listen to me. They're not going to listen to me. Like, I've never been a firefly person.
And he's like, I don't want to do this. Yeah, like, I have no investment in this. This is like your thing.
And Tess is like, you can do it because they'll listen to you. And you need to keep her alive and set everything right. And please say yes, Joel. In that moment, an infected corpse, you know, shakes to... Not life, afterlife, whatever you call it. Joel walks over, shoots it. But that corpse happened to be laying in a pile of the cordyceps fungal net, which transmits the signal to a nearby horde. And you can hear them screeching, growing louder. And they'll be there in about a minute. Tess is like, okay, I'm going to stay and hold them off. And this is when she says to Joel, save who you can save. You know, you can save her. I can save you, and I'm going to stay here. Joel then races with Ellie out of the building, drags her out. Ellie is like, no, we're not leaving
her. Not leaving her. Like, what are you talking about?
Again, this, like, naive innocence, the childlike, why can't we help kind of feeling. The same thing that that Sarah displayed on the night that everything broke out, which is like, why aren't we stopping for that family? Behind them, the building explodes as Tess, with her last strength, ignites her cigarette lighter, which sends up barrels of gasoline and loose hand grenades. And Joel heads off in the direction they need to go, with Ellie just kind of shocked, staring at everything.
X-ray vision will be back.
And we're back. Without spoiling how this is going to go for people who haven't played the game, I think one thing that's important to get here is how much everybody but Joel wants to save the world and help people.
Yeah, exactly. Joel's relationships are defined by the people closest to him.
He's a selfish guy, but his core.
He's selfish, but...
In a understandable and humane, in a way that you can relate to.
It expands almost like a force field, like an invisible woman force field around those he loves. And yes, it's going to be really important. And I'm very interested to see where this goes, because, so let's talk about Tess dying. This is almost identical to the video game.
Almost
except
identical.
Except in the video game, she's killed by Fedra soldiers.
Right.
So I love this choice because I think that it's really interesting that now we have the two people Joel's loved. One was killed by soldiers, one was killed by infected. So mm-hmm. it adds that. And I'm very interested in the game. Joel does not take this death well. And no. he takes it out on Ellie, kind of like in a way that he sees her as the reason that this happened.
Ellie apologizes profusely in the moments in the game.
Yeah.
After this happens.
And Joel's like, you cannot talk about
Tess. Yeah, don't talk about Tess. We're not talking about Tess anymore. Don't say her name.
I'm interested to see if they go the exact same route, because that's a really rough, like, emotional journey for the two of them.
I agree.
But yeah, I'm just like, so many people in our Discord were just so upset that Tess died. Anna Torv is so good.
She's so good.
That even though I knew where this was going, it still kind of shocks you, because you're just like, she was so good. Didn't you want to keep her around? Didn't you want to take her to Billstown? Didn't you just want to imagine what that role would be?
Spoiler but she, alert, Billstown.
Billstown. If you watch the end, you know, if you've that may be the name of the next chapter of the game.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm very, I just think she was just so brilliant in this role. And also, now somebody in our Discord did say that they think the first season is going to be the first game and that had been confirmed. I have not read it, but I will say the speed that this is occurring does make that seem like it could be possible.
Yeah, I agree.
The speed that we are going through the events of the game.
I mean, we're already at this point about 15 levels into the game, you know, 15 missions into
exactly.
the game.
Exactly. This is the end of chapter 3, and there's 12 chapters in the game. So I'm very interested, because I think that would be one of the bravest choices that we've seen in TV for a long time, to not stretch out to 5 seasons, to just not do that expansive kind of wide world, long-term storytelling that The Walking Dead did to get to a point, and to instead understand that that game has one of the most heartbreaking storylines, and to just tell it in one season. And what you do after that is what you do after that to deal with the fallout.
Now, I think people were surprised at how quickly Tess went out, even though, as you mentioned, she does go out in the same exact portion of the story, the game version of the story, that she does in the television version of the story. But, well, first of all, it feels like you spend a lot more time with her. Mm-hmm. One, because she kills about 100 people in that time.
That's the predominant experience of Tess in
and,
the game.
And, you know, depending on how good you are at the game, you could have, by that time, have spent anywhere from 3 hours to 10 hours.
Yeah,
with
exactly,
her, depending
exactly,
on if you die
exactly.
all the time. Somebody in our Discord had a really funny comment that alerting the first clicker, Ellie gasping, validated his play style, which is being bad at stealth.
No. I have to do stealth. I've been playing the game, and like, if I try and go chaos mode, I'm the opposite. Because if I go chaos mode, I lose. I lose every time, whether it's a clicker, especially if it's a soldier. But yeah, it's really fun. This is just such a good show, and I think they're making a lot of really interesting choices.
I agree.
Because also, as well, this is a show where twice now within the first 2 episodes, they faked you out on who your main cast is going to be. Because when the first episode, you think it's going to be Tommy, and you think it's going to be Joel, that's true. And you think it's going to be Sarah, that was not true. Then you think it's going to be Tess and Joel and Ellie. And again, you lose one of them within that episode. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see how they keep people on the edges of their seat. And the best thing is, as someone who's played the game, the show is still completely engaging, and it's really fun to see how closely they're adapting it. But I've seen, and this is my thing that makes me most excited, I've seen so many people who've never played the game in our Discord, online, reviewers, who just are absolutely invested.
It's really well done.
After 2 episodes.
It's really well done and a great story. And I think one of the things 2 episodes in that we can kind of count on is how they're going to fill in the blanks of the game. I mean, there's significant blanks in the game. We don't know. Mm-hmm. There's a lot about the Fireflies we don't know. There's a lot about how Fedra works that we don't know. We know next to nothing about how the fungus spread. And the fact that, you know, episode 1, you get all this interesting backstory. You follow Sarah for a lot longer than you initially think that, you know, considering how long you follow Joel. Episode 2, you get how the fungus broke out. I think that is going to be is going to continue to be how this show improves on what is already an excellent story told through through video games, which is by filling in all these blanks with flashbacks, with all the stuff you didn't see in the game, and really keeping the stuff that's ripped directly from the game as the more kind of like suspenseful, thrilling,
Exactly.
action stuff, which is what the game does so well.
Replicating those moments of like real horror.
Yeah,
I'm very interested as well to see if every cold open is going to be a different scientist, because they've kind of set that up, and I'd really love to see maybe how it impacted people all over the world. You know, Chernobyl was very much about like showing how things break down in this kind of human bureaucracy, like slow time. And I feel like these cold opens are kind of interesting touches of that. So I'm really excited to see what happens in the cold open for episode three.
Later this week for our Friday episode, we're going to be covering the video game and the second installment of our coverage of The Last of Us video game. So check back for that. And of course, we're going to be covering The Last of Us on HBO Max every Wednesday in your headphones. Up next, Nerd Out.
In today's Nerd Out, where you tell us what you love and why, or as you have been doing recently, share a theory with us that makes you excited, which is obviously, we love theories, the tinfoil hattier, the better. But so far, I have to say, we've been getting a lot of very sensible theories.
Yes.
And yes, we have a new theory from Brandon that is about how a real life incident could possibly inspire the way that the MCU chooses to introduce mutants. So Jason, do you want to read the theory?
Sure. Hi, Jason and Rosie. Hi. I've been behind on podcasts and catching up, but every time you talk about mutants needing to be hated and feared, I have a thought and forget to send it in. I think there's a really great and effective way to do it that the audience would buy immediately, make it a pandemic. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. kind of used this idea with Terra Genesis during their Inhumans arc, and I think it would work really well in our post-pandemic time. My two cents, thanks. That's a fun theory, Brandon. So that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. arc is ripped from the comics.
Yeah, the Inhumans, Terra Genesis, and kind of the way that they get their powers, which is you have to go through this process where the Terrigen Mist brings out your powers. There's definitely a way with mutants, because Terra Genesis is very similar to like the mutant gene being activated. We know that in the Weapon X program, and even in like the Deadpool movies, which everyone's really familiar with, there's this idea that you can activate a mutant gene. So they could definitely do something where an illness or a global pandemic activated people's mutant genes. So you don't have to deal with that kind of analogy of, oh, mutation is an illness, but you could talk about like how coming out of an illness could affect people, make people scared of it.
Yeah.
And also it would be a very interesting way to bring real life into it. I think a lot of people are ready to see TV and film that actually deals with or talks about the pandemic that we have lived through, that we are living through, you know? So I think this is really interesting. The Marvel comics don't have a great history of doing like illness analogies with mutation, but I would love to see a thoughtful way. And I do think that there's something in that idea of taking inspiration from Terra Genesis and making it something where the mutant gene is actually accelerated and then you could have mutations in all different ages as well. If they have the mutant gene, but it hadn't been activated yet, you know, that's what happens to Deadpool in the movies. They kind of activate the gene through this horrible process of like torturing him and stuff. So the idea of some kind of pandemic that rather than giving people powers just activates a mutant gene would be, I think, really interesting. And also, you know, the MCU, I like the weirdest stuff. Everybody knows that. But the MCU has long been grounded in this kind of idea of finding real ways to bring. And also, I think that there's something really interesting to talk about like superheroes and disability and superheroes and chronic illness and all that kind of stuff. And that's not often really deeply explained. So again, if it was through an illness or something, there's lots of interesting kind of connotations and ripe ground for exploration there.
Now, fun fact, the Terrigen Bomb and Terra Genesis, you know, the kind of elevator pitch of that storyline was that a bomb filled with Terrigen Mist was detonated in the atmosphere, causing lots of people who have the latent Inhuman gene to develop powers.
Including Kamala Khan.
Including Kamala Khan. Now, fun fact, this was done in Marvel Comics pre-Disney's acquisition of Fox as a way to bring the mutants to the screen without actually using them because they didn't own the IP at that time.
Exactly. So at the time, it was quite hard to find a Fantastic Four comic because they didn't own the IP. It had been licensed away. And it was very hard to find a comic that was solely focused on the X-Men and the Terrigen Bomb and the Terrigen Mist and people like Kamala Khan, who was originally pitched as a mutant but then became an Inhuman in the comics through that. It was basically hilarious editorial edicts to basically say, look, we do have them. We got these heroes.
Yeah, we got them.
We got this guy who can't talk. His voice is too loud. We got a cool dog. Yeah. Everybody loves that dog.
Well, everybody loves Lockjaw. Come on, guys. Everybody loves Lockjaw. That's true. You can teleport, guys.
I actually would love to see Lockjaw. I would love to see Lockjaw in Ms. Marvel season 2.
Pet Avengers. We've talked about it.
We are the Pet Avengers superstars. Yeah. But you know what? The real truth is we all saw how the Inhumans TV show went down. Like a lead balloon. And if you even remember that it happened, you can watch it on Disney Plus, though.
Yeah.
It's very strange, has an unbelievable cast, but it didn't.
Bad wigs.
Bad wigs. Also, they shaved off Medusa's hair in the first episode. Her power is literally that she has prehensile hair. So as soon as they did that, you knew there was going to be a problem. But yeah, I would be very interested. A lot of people thought that Ms. Marvel was going to introduce Inhumans. I was always hoping it was going to be a mutant story. But I'm very interested to know if the Inhumans have a future in the MCU after we saw Anson Mount, again, great casting, come back for that really memorable moment in Multiverse of Madness. I'll be very interested to see if there's a universe where the Inhumans are the major heroes and whether or not that comes into play as we get to this kind of inevitable Secret Wars convergence, kind of like multiple universes in one.
Just no legacy virus type situation,
please. That's not what we want.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
Thanks, Brandon. If you have theories or passions you want to share, hit us up at xray@crooked.com. Instructions in the show notes. That's it for us. Rosie, anything to plug?
You can follow me on Instagram and Letterboxd. That's my only social media, Rosie Marks with an X. I will be writing a bunch of stuff in the lead up to Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, which obviously we are very excited about and we'll be getting more excited about in the upcoming weeks. You can check out my writing at IGN, Nerdist, Polygon, Den of Geek, all kinds of good places. I've got a big Den of Geek cover story coming out soon for our currently unannounced cool thing. Jason, what about you? Where do people find you?
You can find me in your podcast feed
every Wednesday and Friday, right here. Me too.
And that's about it for right now. Watch Primo when it comes out on Amazon Freevee sometime, I don't know, in the spring and or summer of 2023. And we'll catch you on the flip side. 5-star reviews, 5-star ratings. We want 1, no. We want 2, no. We want 3, no. 4, keep going. 5, yes, perfect. We want 5-star ratings.
Five,
we want
five
star ratings on your podcast review rating platform of choice. Here's one from Bill's Preston. Love this pod. Thank you, Bill. X-Ray is at the top of my list of awesome pods. I love listening to Jason and Rosie, the depth of their comics and pop culture knowledge is amazing. Super pumped that the show is coming twice a week in 2023. That's right.
It is.
Let's do it.
Twice a week. We're pumped too. And if you want to read a transcript of the show, something I'm very excited about, they are posted beneath the show notes on the Crooked website for each episode within 48 hours of you being able to listen. So it's a great way for more people to be able to experience the show.
Catch the next episode on Friday, January 27th. And remember, we're bringing you 2 episodes a week, 2 episodes a week. That's twice the episodes, twice the deep dives, 2 times the everything else. Subscribe to us on YouTube, where you can now watch full episodes of this show. Plus, follow the @XRVPod handle on Twitter and check out the Discord. Come to the Discord, folks. It's great. The water's nice. It's a great place to meet and hang out with. Tons of amazing fans and listeners, plus Rosie and I are there. X-Ray Vision is a Crooked Media production. The show is produced by Chris Lord and Saul Rubin. The show is executive produced by myself and Sandy Gerard. Our editing and sound design is by Vasilis Fotopoulos. Dylan Villanueva and Matt DeGroote provide video production support. Alex Relliford handles social media. Thank you, Brian Vasquez, for our theme music. Goodbye.
Farewell.